Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hello, D-Aliens. This is Miraz, your executive producer of the DA Show. Yeah, I'm going to say sidekick on the DA Show, and we all know the king of all work ethic. This right here, this is the best of today's DA Show. Listen up.
But let's start with the weekend that was, obviously filled with demonstrations and protests. Unfortunately, some places rioting and looting as well. But I think that the message, if you could peer through the violence, which did not happen everywhere, was that there is a message that is very powerful, that is very important, that is very difficult to challenge right now. I'd find it very difficult for anybody to challenge out there the idea that police brutality or senseless killings by those in authority would be defended in any single way. Of course, I think we all agree that law enforcement have a remarkably difficult and stressful job. My father-in-law is in the law enforcement and has been for about 30 years, and have had some interesting conversations, important conversations with him about the stresses that go into it and the training that goes into it and what happens when things go wrong. But I think that everybody can fall on the same page of senseless or irresponsible moments of killing people that are, of course, in the crosshairs for something that does not deserve anything close to that type of punishment, needs to be eradicated. And that's a message that I think can't be lost here. And amongst all of this fury and all of these riots and all of these protests and a lot of the peaceful protests and moments that you have seen on social media that actually people have come together and understanding and conversation and listening, I do believe that is what I hope is the core that is carried forward, that there is a greater good here for a long term. And that is that, unfortunately, in this country, for a series of reasons, we have staked out our part of the territory, looked across at those that are staking out a different part of the territory and said, you're not like me, I disagree with you, you are wrong, you are an idiot, I don't like you, you're the enemy. It's been a lot of division for a long time, and it has been heightened at this point. And so there is not a lot of common ground. There's not a lot of middle ground, and there is not a lot of priority placed on conceding any ground. There is not a priority placed on that. There's a priority placed on, I'm right, you're wrong, you're never going to be right, I don't want to really hear your side, I don't care about your side, I go to my side, I go to my TV channel, I go to my social media feed, I go to the people that I know agree with my stances, and that's all I'm interested in. And the other side does the same exact thing, and that happens with race. That happens with gender. It happens with all types of places in American culture where we have now fractured and said, this is who I am. I'm only going to surround myself with the like-minded voices, and that's who you are, and we shall never meet in the middle. And it has led to this, and it has to break, and it has to break open, and people have to recognize that the other side is not completely wrong and completely demonized, and that the priority here is actually compassion. The priority here is actually listening to the other side. The priority here has to be understanding, or at least trying to. A lot of people just don't want to do that because they're angry. They've been told not to do that. They're following some type of path they think is the right one that has led them here. So the message this week, this weekend, amongst all of the violence and rioting and protesting and peaceful protests and dissent and people that are really unhappy right now, is to listen, It is to hear. It is to think. It is to ask. And athletes jumped involved with that this weekend. There was a lot of athletes that spoke out on social media. There was also a lot of athletes that were involved in some of the protests and some of the gatherings. And Jaylen Brown was maybe the most notable. He's one of the best young players in the league for the Boston Celtics, and his story is a really compelling one. He drove 15 hours from Boston all the way to Atlanta and said, "This is where I'm from. I'm from Atlanta. I need to be part of this." And amazingly, Jaylen Brown, at 23 years old, is a vice president in the union already. Now, that's a pretty hefty leadership position to have at 23 years old. But I saw not only athletes driving 15 hours, I saw athletes on social media that were maybe speaking up that we have not seen speak up before or in the same tone that we have seen before. You know, Joe Burrow had a pretty powerful message. We had Nick Saban issue a statement. We had people all across sports that were white or black, people of color or not, who were mobilized or who were invested enough to want to say something. And so I wonder if this week, if athletes changed, or if this was just kind of a moment in time, a weekend where you felt compelled to have to say something, maybe compelled to have to state your case, felt compelled to pick a side, if you will. And that will just kind of evaporate into the air. It is where we begin your cold open.
Being a celebrity, being an NBA player, don't exclude me from no conversation at all. First and foremost, I'm a black man, and I'm a member of this community, and I grew up on this soil, so I want to say that first and foremost, but raising awareness, some of the injustice that we've been seeing is not okay. And as a young person, you gotta listen to our perspective. Our voices need to be heard.
Amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
So that was Jaylen Brown, and I think for some athletes, this will provide just a temporary place where they felt like they had to say something. And, you know, that's good and bad. I think that's good and bad for society in general. When something happens that you're watching on TV or you're watching scroll across your phone and you feel like, well, I should say something because everybody's saying something, even though you don't really have anything good to say, nothing all that insightful, nothing all that compelling. I don't think necessarily that's always of that great value the way that some people do, you know. But that is going to be what some people's tact is, and so that involves athletes as well. Some athletes will just say something, anything, to kind of plant their flag and say, I'm on this side, or I'm on that side, or what have you. But I think, by and large, this is an important moment for athletes, because athletes do have such a powerful place in our culture. They hold such a place of influence, and social media allows them to not have to go the traditional routes to have a voice. They have a voice directly. Not always good to have that at their disposal, clearly, but they do have that. And I think for athletes right now in this moment, they're not playing. They're not consumed by their jobs. They're not practicing. They're not in film rooms. They're not in meetings. They're not playing in games. They're forced to have to just sit there and think about what is going on and digest what is going on and ask themselves, what am I going to do? I think we're all asking ourselves that. And because this is a pandemic, because this is a moment of kind of stillness in the world right now to varying degrees, you do not have your life distracting you away. You're sitting there and asking yourself, okay, well, how do I feel about this? And I think athletes are doing that right now as well. And what I hope ends up happening is that there are athletes here that, because they have space away from the game, are going to use that platform, that notoriety, that celebrity, to really become leaders in the community. I think that's a really valuable thing. I think we lack that a lot of times. I think we've lacked strong backbones in communities where people look up to and really trust and say, wow, that person's invested. That person has the best interests of our community, instead of distrust that happens in politics all the time. Not many people trust many people in politics. And I think it would be really great if this is the seed that starts growing plants where athletes with their voices say, you know what? I'm invested in this. I want to be invested in this. I have a voice. I can be part of things, whether it's this cause or other causes. I can be part of something. And I want to be. I want to be more than just an athlete, more than just somebody that gets paid to play basketball, play football, play baseball, hockey, soccer, etc. You know, it's interesting. Michael Jordan over the weekend had some strong words about what he saw. And Michael Jordan was never a guy that ever had an opinion ever on anything socially, culturally, anything about humanity at large. Not when he was playing. He was too consumed in the brand and consumed with making as much money as possible and not upsetting either side of the line. And for Michael to speak out now, it kind of shows that there's a new era upon us where athletes do feel empowered to do that. And I hope that they do that, and do that not just to do it in words, but to do it in actions. And I hope it encourages us all for action, not just words, not just to watch and be bystanders, but to be part of the solution, not the problem. Be the change you wish to see in the world. And I hope that this is the start of some athletes doing that. When I see the write-up for this date in Mothership history, I have to laugh because it reminds me of the drop that we have from Zach Gelb, who says, "Fat shame Mraz."
Maybe he'll fat shame Mraz.
It's a very aggressive drop from Zach. He's really spitting it at you. "Fat shame Mraz."
Maybe he'll fat shame Mraz.
And when I read the write-up from Connor Green today, it says, "This date in Mothership history, June the 1st, 2015, Mraz defends against fat shaming." Now, this
fat
happened
shame, Mraz.
5 years ago, but I feel like it could have happened yesterday, could have happened on Friday, could have happened last Friday, could have happened last year on a Friday, 2 years ago on a Tuesday, 3 years ago on a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It feels like we do this quite a bit. So it's time for this date in Mothership history.
Come all, step inside. It's this date in Mothership history.
On June the 1st, 2015, Mraz defended against, you guessed it, fat shaming.
Fat shame, Mraz.
There is an ad campaign for Protein World that has the picture, a picture of a chick in a bikini. Okay, she's got ripped abs or whatever. She looks great. The billboard, this was in London, it says, "Are you beach body ready? The summer is here. Or is your body in beach body shape?" Now, look, I might be thin, but would I like to be more jacked? Of course. Would I like to look better in a swimsuit? Of course. But I'm still going to go out to the beach, and I'm still going to take off my shirt, and I'm going to be fine. Sure. You live to see another day. It's okay.
I mean, you could tighten up those biceps a little bit.
But look, as I said, I could be in the gym every single day working out, but not my bit.
There's no such thing as beach body. There is body, and everybody is allowed to have whatever body they want and show up on the beach and flaunt their stuff.
This isn't saying you're not allowed to. This is just saying, are you beach body ready?
It's not saying you're not allowed to, but it's making you feel uncomfortable. Like, if you pass that sign, you go, a couple of those shakes ain't going to help me get to, like, apparently what's acceptable on the beach. And now I can't show up in my Scooby-Doos and sit out there on the beach and have a good time. Everybody's allowed to be who they want to be.
You can look chubbo. What do I care? Look however you want.
But I don't need billboards telling me I should look like that to be accepted on the beach. That's exactly what it's saying. God.
Well, so I have to feel shame? I just think that you realize what's attainable, what's unattainable, and you're insecure about apparently not being healthy.
There you go with the H word again.
If I can't use the F word, how I can't use the H word? It's just like, so no one's allowed to ever describe anything of health. Like, we just can't go there because it'll make somebody feel bad.
No, you could say you want to be healthy, but how about then put a picture of, you know, me up there kind of like eating. Something like that. You're putting
so
up.
The billboard should be you.
Well, then everybody looks up and goes, well, I don't want to look like that, so maybe I should. But when you see somebody look like that, it's almost like you're putting up somebody that's unattainable to get. Okay. And then you're making it feel like, well, wait, I can't. I'm hot over summer. I'm sweating because I'm overweight. Now I can't get to the beach because I'm going to feel uncomfortable because I'm going to look like that.
You can't look at healthy people and not feel shame? How is that?
No, you can. You see enough healthy people walk in the street and feel shame. I don't need to see healthy people telling me I'm a disaster.
Well, don't feel shame then.
I can't help how my intestines feel. I look up, I feel shame. I'm shameful. Look at me. I got C cups. I'm a man.
Now, during quarantine, have the C cups gone to D cups?
They're not D cups, but they're flopping all over the place. I got in a bathing suit in my pool, and I'm a wreck. I am a true wreck. I am nowhere near where I was last summer. I'm very sloppy. I'm very floppy.
You're up 14 from start of quarantine?
Up 11. I lost 3 last week. It's really, you got to okay. see. I'm basically having press conferences with my wife, dog, and baby with a curve up there telling you where we're at. And the weight gain began to flatten a little bit here. We had our biggest decrease in pounds to date through the quarantine after a big spike in cases. So we believe that we've plateaued a little bit here on the weight loss, weight gain. And there's not an Entenmann's donut to be found right now as I've thrown out some junk food.
What is the toughest part about looking at yourself in the mirror right now?
I think it's a combination. I'm just so pasty white while being floppy that at least if I was tan and my moobs were just drooping, at least it would look a little better. It's just like, if they came out a fat version of the movie Powder, and that's me right now. It's just, I look gross. Like,
so you look belly, like an, you look like an Entenmann's powdered donut.
I do. And then like, if I look, my belly button looks like you're staring into like where that reverse galaxy is that they reported about in the news. It's just a deep hole that doesn't end because of where I'm at. So it's just, it's gross. I'm pasty and sloppy.
So that's where SpaceX actually went, right into your belly button.
Right into my belly button. I can't find how deep this goes. It's not a spoon long enough.
So I want to talk about this with the upcoming NFL season. Assuming that the NFL season is played, it will likely be, at least at the start, without fans. I would imagine that we shouldn't really start thinking about fans in the stands of football games until later on in the fall. But again, who knows if there's flare-ups that happen, if there's another wave of the coronavirus that happens because weather gets cold, flu season, people's immune systems are down, etc. We have no idea about how that's going to look. So if we just assume that the start of the NFL season and college football season, if there's college football played, but with at least the NFL, it's a controllable. You don't have to worry about students being on campus, not being on campus, government institutions, state-funded institutions. You're just talking about a players' union and a multi-billion dollar business. If there's no fans in the stands and football is played in the NFL, how do you fill the void? How do you fill the void of silence in stadiums that seat 70,000 people? You know, it's been interesting to watch this recent evolution of Bundesliga because the German Soccer League had gone from completely silent matches in its opening weekend to FS1 and other telecasts pumping in crowd noise. The telecasts have pumped in some crowd noise so that it sounded like there were fans in the stands. That seems a little weird because there aren't fans in the stands. The players can't hear it. But it certainly is far more normal sounding than it being completely silent. And I think most people have had a pretty positive reaction to the sounds in the stands, the sounds of the game without there being actual fans attending. So the NFL is kicking around the same idea. We had Joe Buck, who had said recently on a podcast, yeah, we're going to pump in crowd noise. That is going to happen. And we're going to act like there's going to be a crowd when there isn't a crowd. That's what we're planning for. And that's not all that surprising because you have this massive television contract and CBS and Fox and NBC. Oh, they are loving the idea of football coming back because what will those numbers look like? Could you imagine what those ratings that are normally very strong look like in the middle of this when people are just dying for football to come back and sports to come back and their Sundays to be somewhat normal. Oh, my goodness. But is it possible that actually just the players themselves, because there's so much talking, there's so much ambient conversation around NFL games, football games, that maybe it's better to be able to hear them on the field. Maybe it's more compelling than just kind of being put at ease because you kind of hear a fake crowd. Eagles offensive lineman Lane Johnson and wide receiver DeSean Jackson had a YouTube conversation about miking up everybody. And DeSean Jackson said, yeah, it's going to get crazy. I think they should. They should give the fans the inside to really see what goes on between the white lines. It gets crazy, bro. I know in the trenches it gets crazy. I know out there on the outside it gets crazy, too, the conversations that we have going back and forth. So what's better here? Is it that if we mic'd up every player and got to hear everything? Or is it fake crowd noise? Personally, for me, if you had everybody mic'd up and you had everything going out, I mean, obviously you have to have an audio director choose which conversations you want because clearly you can't have everybody talking at the same time. But if you have all of those conversations happening and you could actually hear them, I love that better than fake crowd noise because football lends itself to a lot of trash talking and calls at the line, and of course play calls and audibles and hot reads and linebackers calling out who's what, and you just have just a lot of chatter. You know, in a lot of other sports like baseball, you're not going to have much that's all that interesting. In soccer, I don't think there's been much that's all that interesting either, but in basketball and football, there's such constant communication that would be pretty fascinating, and especially football because you have basically talk, 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 play, talk, 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 play, talk, 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 talk. You know, in basketball, you might have longer stretches without a lot of conversation because plays are taking 25, 35, 45 seconds to get ready. From a football standpoint, you've got to converse in the huddle at the line of scrimmage, the play call, you know, what snap count, and then the play goes off. Play is done in 10 seconds, and then you're back to everybody talking again. So I think actually it could be fascinating. The only thing is it'll never happen. It'll never happen because it's impossible to police all of those conversations. There's just no way these TV directors and the producers and the audio people are going to want to, on the fly, try to police 22 guys who are dropping all types of F-bombs. No matter if you tell them don't do it or not, you know it's going to happen. And you can't afford that type of language to get out over national TV. And on top of it, coaches would never go for hearing their play calls out there. And quarterbacks would never go for letting their signals be called out there. And they would never go for hearing inside the huddle. The reason that we have mic'd up anything is that NFL films get the audio and then it gets chopped up and edited and they strip away the really interesting stuff because they have to. And the same thing when we have players mic'd up for Monday night. What you end up having is just the same old, all right, guys, let's go out there. It's our time, baby. It's our time. All right, oh, man. Hey, he looks good tonight. Let's go out there. Let's win this game. I mean, you just have the same old stuff every single week. None of it's all that interesting. So while in a perfect world, I'd love all players to be mic'd up, I know that's unrealistic, so there's going to be the pumped-in fake crowd noise. If you had a choice, Mraz, which one are you taking for football games in the fall?
I'm pumped-in crowd noise because I'm with you. Anything that's really, truly, like, going to wow me that a player will say, my bet is probably involves a bad word and will end up being dumped out and we'll get silenced anyway. And, yeah, we get enough of that with the Inside the NFL or whatever other show during the week, you know, Hard Knocks and whatever Amazon Prime show there is. I'm good with mic'd up players. To me, I want it to sound as normal as possible. I don't want this all of a sudden to be an experimental year with the NFL on television. I want what I enjoy watching. And if that means, like we've heard with the Bundesliga, it sounds pretty normal with the crowd noise. give me that. Give me fake defense chance. I would much rather that than hearing some speech on the sideline or some trash talk between a corner and a wide receiver. I mean, maybe you can implement some of that if you have more players mic'd up, if you go back to it in editing, like, oh, this is what happened earlier in the first quarter and these guys going back. But anything that's semi-real time, I don't think is going to be all that interesting anyway.
Admittedly, I have not played Madden in more than 10 years. I probably played Madden back in like 08 or 09. How's the crowd noise in a Madden game? Are they using like over-the-top crowd noise? Is there a pretty good balance?
I think it's a good balance to the point that you're saying that now, and I played Madden again 2 days ago. I'm in the middle of a franchise mode. The crowd noise never even strikes me as anything. The analyst work by Charles Davis is unbelievable. But yeah, so the crowd noise is just background. It's just secondary to the point that you're not really even thinking about it. And I think that's where the NFL has to go. It has to sound at a comfort level because the lack of crowd noise at all, plus the mic'd up stuff, is just going to be a constant weird reminder that there's no fans. And I think that we should get away from that.
So you've now watched Bundesliga the last three weekends. It's part of your Saturday and Sunday tradition now. It's part of your weekends.
I'm into it. I had an hour between games on Saturday that I had to run to get mulch at Lowe's, and I waited for that hour of in between. It's at DA, look, I'm total fraud alert. You know me a long time. I have always been the make fun of soccer guy, always. For no reason, you know, you talk about all the troll stuff I've ever done on Twitter. I have always mocked, you know, World Cup parties, what are you kidding? I can't get enough. If I'm not up by 9:30 on a Saturday, which I would be anyway with the baby, it's a problem. I need to get out there, and I need to be watching Bundesliga.
So have you gotten used to the fake crowd noise?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, this week, it took me to the second game. Might have been the Silky game. I'm still getting used to these team names. Where I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. No crowd again. I think they're shooting it awesome. I think the advertising looks good in the lower bowl. And the way the crowd noise is pumped in, it's not, again, I can't show this stuff. It's not cheesy crowd noise that you'd get from your Papa Shot game at your local arcade when the whistle goes off. It sounds like a game that's being played in front of you, which I think is awesome. The riding of the levels is awesome. I'm into it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you're at Dave and Buster's and you went to Papa Shot. Right. It's like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Right, exactly. That would sound cheesy. This is perfect. I think the way Fox is doing it specifically is perfect, but CBS, I'm sure, can, NBC, ESPN as well. So I think this is the way to go. I really do. And I think if more people were watching Bundesliga, he'd look at me waving the soccer flag here. He would be real comfortable with how the NFL could potentially sound like this.
Premier League is going to be another interesting one because there's such huge global numbers and ratings with Premier League, and they're going to come back on June the 17th. So we're a little over 2 weeks away from them coming back. When Premier League comes back, I can't wait to see how they handle the telecast because those are usually some of the most streamlined, polished telecasts in any sports league anywhere. So let's see how NBC and their family networks handles the crowd noise. But I think my guess is because it's worked so well with the Bundesliga, they're going to pump in crowd noise to the Premier League.
DA, what do I do when the Premier League comes back, though? I can't now turn my back on Bundesliga, but everybody's going to go, you got to watch Premier League. Now what am I doing? Now,
well, I want to tell you this. As a soccer fan, the quality of the soccer in the Premier League is not much better than the Bundesliga. In fact, you could argue the best teams of the Bundesliga and the best matches are better than most of what you would see in the Premier League. It's very equivalent in terms of the talent. It's just that the brands of the Premier League are so big. You know, there's nothing quite like Man City and Man United and Liverpool and, you know, all your big ones, your Tottenhams. And so if you're just looking for the best soccer, stay with the Bundesliga. You're doing just fine. If you're looking for the brand that you could understand and know, oh, I know Manchester United, I know Liverpool, then you'll want to go there. But you know what? There's plenty of soccer for everybody.
I just don't want to be that person who, like, is at a loyal bar, right? You go into the loyal bar, and all of a sudden a bar opens up across the street, and everybody flocks to it, and you really just don't want to give up on the bar you're at and be like, well, I'm not going to go to the new place. And I feel like Twitter is going to become this place where I am just finally now integrating myself and understanding the game of Bundesliga, and everybody now is going to be tweeting up a storm at the Premier League, and I'm going to be sitting there holding my hat going, wait, we don't care about Dortmund anymore?
Yeah, but you would have credibility then amongst the Bundesliga fans. They would know that you stuck through them with the thick and thin.
If this ends with me at the age of 45 as the premier Bundesliga beat writer in America, that would be some turn.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Glad you're with us here on a fine Monday aboard the DA show. And we begin with your best audio of the day with James Jones, the former Packers wide receiver, joined the Pat McAfee show right here on CBS Sports Radio, and says, you are going to see a highly motivated Aaron Rodgers this season.
I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron Rodgers wins MVP this year, man.
Oh.
He's a guy who's always going to accept the challenge, man. He's going to always rise to the occasion, man. And now you have a guy in the first round who eventually is going to have to play. We don't know if it's going to be 4 years. We don't know if it's going to be 2 years. We don't know if it's going to be 10. We don't know. But we know when you take a guy in the first round, they are going to want to see him play before his contract is up. And Aaron Rodgers knows that. He was one of those guys that was drafted in the first round and had those opportunities. So he knows for that. To push that back, you have to play at a high level. And I believe Aaron Rodgers is going to come out. He will win MVP this year.
He will win MVP this year. I absolutely believe we are going to see one of the best seasons Aaron Rodgers ever has. I don't know if I would put him at MVP at this point in his career. Perhaps that would also mean that not only do the Green Bay Packers have a great season, but also that Aaron Rodgers helps carry them there. He is the reason why. And this offense is no longer really built around Aaron Rodgers having huge games and huge moments and huge numbers. It's still, they're trying to make this more of a balanced offense. So I still think, you know, your quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, who are the central points of their offense, and their offensive systems are let it rip, are far better candidates for that type of season. But I do think that the drafting of Jordan Love is the type of thing that absolutely gets Rodgers' attention, puts that chip on his shoulder even more, and throws him into a bleep you season. I could absolutely see that being a bleep you season upcoming for Rodgers. And I don't know if that means he's in conflict constantly with Matt LaFleur, or if that just means that he wants to prove to everybody out there, you know what, I'm not washed up. They drafted Jordan Love, but I'm not done here yet. But I do think a guy that's as proud as Rodgers and still as talented as Rodgers, if the system allows, he is going to have a phenomenal season. We continue as part of Soundcheck here with Andy Reid. He's got one of those quarterbacks that could easily win the MVP and already has in Patrick Mahomes. But he was not a proponent of the proposed 4th and 15, which would have been the replacement to the onside kick. Here's Andy Reid on the Rich Eisen Show.
I'm a little bit of a traditionalist in some ways because I think this can lead a little bit down the road to where all of a sudden you start kicking out the kickoff return and kickoff. And I've got talented players for that particular phase of the game. And I got the best, or at least one of the best and possibly in the history of the game coaches in Dave Toth. So I like to be able to exploit that area.
So for Andy Reid, I mean, it's a kind of win-win situation. You're the defending Super Bowl champ, so you are clearly good enough to win all of the games you need to win in how the game is structured and how your units are structured. So no matter what here, Andy Reid, it's kind of like when you are the big winner, you don't want anything to change. When you are doing better than everybody else, you definitely don't want the rules of the game to change. So, you know, the wealthiest people in America don't want any wealth distribution. They don't want a new tax bracket. They like how things are going. They don't want a new economy. They're doing quite well, thank you. So for Andy Reid, yeah, you know what? We're just going to stay put here, Stan Pat. We like the way it's going right now because we win a lot of football games and just won the Super Bowl. But I actually think this is a little short-sighted by Andy, because 4th and 15, instead of needing an onside kick, absolutely helps out the Chiefs more than any other team. There is no offense and no quarterback better suited to convert a 4th-and-15 if the Chiefs needed to come back and needed to steal a possession than Mahomes and that offense. They would have a significant advantage over everybody else. Let's just say if the Chiefs trailed by 12 points and there was 2 minutes to go and they had only one timeout, they could feasibly score in 36 seconds and need the onside kick but couldn't stop the clock again. And instead of needing a 9% chance of getting the onside kick, have a one play for 15 yards, and you'd be scared if you were the defense. You'd be like, oh, God, we have to defend a 4th-and-15 from Mahomes? We don't want to do that. We'd much rather try to get the onside kick. So it could work against the Chiefs if they've got big leads on teams, and then teams can go against the Chiefs' defense, which clearly isn't their strength, but it would really help out the Chiefs as the one team that you would be scared of. You can't give them the 4th-and-15. And finally, here is Ryan McDonough, who is the former GM of the Phoenix Suns, who joined JR Sport Brief here on CBS Sports Radio on how a 1-16 seeding would look in the NBA playoffs if there was no West and Eastern Conference brackets.
A lot of the Western Conference teams want the playoffs to be seeded 1-16 regardless of conference. They say, look, if we're going to take travel out of the equation, we're all going to be in the same site in Orlando, why don't we just seed 1-16 based on regular season record? And if two Eastern Conference teams play each other or two Western Conference teams or there's a cross-conference matchup, it doesn't matter. There's no travel. We're all in the same place. The 1-16 playoff seeding absolutely has been discussed and, as I mentioned, would be favored by an overwhelming number of Western Conference teams just given how difficult it is to make the playoffs in the West relative to the East.
That's interesting because there would have to be one Western Conference team that would hate it, being the Los Angeles Lakers, because if they seeded it right now, 1-16, you could get the Lakers as the 2 overall seed facing the 15th overall seed, which right now would be the Nets. And if the Nets somehow got Kevin Durant and or Kyrie Irving back, they are no normal 15 seed in this thing, and the Lakers would have a real fight in their hands in the first round. And that is your sound check. Standing by with our headlines this morning is our good friend Brad Heller, also a dessert coordinator. Brad Heller, any good desserts this weekend to note?
Well, DA, my mom, actually, I got to see my mom. She made me these gluten-free, which I'm not always a supporter of, but these were gluten-free chocolate chip peanut butter cookies. I don't even know. They were soft and they were delicious. So
that sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
And she, okay, you know, now why are you not a proponent of gluten-free sometimes?
Well, you know, the taste is not always the same. I mean, I am a gluten supporter. Let's put it that way. I mean, I'll
okay,
have
you're
gluten-free.
Pro-gluten.
I am pro-gluten. I am.
Okay.
But these were exceptionally good and a huge big bag. So you just leave them in the kitchen anytime you walk by, you know. I'm popping them like I'm popping baby M&Ms. You know?
Oh, that's amazing. Now, Mraz, I know that you're usually very pro-gluten as well, but I know that you can dig into a little gluten-free Tate's chocolate chip cookies every so often and enjoy them.
The Tate's is the perfect flat crispness to a cookie and the perfect little salt crunch as well. I've made a turn. There are a lot of gluten-free dessert products I've been introduced to that I didn't even know if I'd miss gluten. There is a great – I mean, I think the Girl Scout Cookie of the Year was gluten-free. That's how I would have voted it. And
wow.
My sister's baked some gluten-free stuff in the past now. And look, you can make a pretty good dessert without gluten. I can't do the no pasta, but desserts I can survive with no gluten.
Have you tried gluten-free pasta, Mraz?
I have. It's not for me. I can tell the difference. It's not. I still would have a lot of trouble functioning in society without gluten dinner products. I could get by on the gluten desserts. Gluten dinners I need.
Okay. All right, Brad Heller, headlines this morning. What do we have?
All right, DA, we'll start with Major League Baseball. The Players Association making its counterproposal to the owners. They want 114 games for the season, up from the 82 the owners are asking for. It would start June 30th and go to October 31st. No additional pay cuts, as we expected, but the union is willing to defer salary up to $100 million if the postseason is canceled, should there be a second wave of the coronavirus. Players are concerned about the virus, of course, and in this proposal, there'd be an opt-out for players to sit out the season. They would still get their service time. Those considered high risk or living with somebody high risk would still get paid, and no pay for those that sit out who are not considered high risk. Owners aren't going to go for more games because they'll just lose more money with no fans in the seats, especially if the players refuse any more pay cuts. DA, you talked yesterday to New York Newsday columnist David Lennon here on the show.
This is a numbers thing. I mean, the losses here are real. You know, when you talk about owners who would rather just not play the games, you know, to prevent further losses, that's real. You know, when you talk about the players demanding they want to get, they feel like they've given up enough of a pay cut already and losing half of their salaries for this season, that's real.
We're hearing that the two sides would have to agree to some sort of deal in the next week to start by July 4th, but now the players want opening day even before that if they're going to play 32 more games. TMZ Sports obtained video of former NBA guard J.R. Smith beating up a man who allegedly damaged his truck during the protests in L.A. over the death of George Floyd. Smith is seen kicking and punching him before the man, who was white, runs away. Smith justified the beating on social media and said it was not a hate crime. A statement from Michael Jordan yesterday, among the many in the NBA community to respond to the death of Floyd and the ensuing protests across the country. Jordan's statement reads that he's deeply saddened, truly pained, and plain angry. He says he stands with those that are calling out the ingrained racism, and he asks for peaceful expressions against injustice and demands accountability. Celtics guard Jaylen Brown led a peaceful protest in Atlanta over the weekend. He made a 15-hour drive from Boston to Georgia for this protest. He is from Marietta. The College Football Hall of Fame is in Atlanta. That was damaged by protesters this weekend. CEO Kimberly Bowden tells the AP most of the damage was to the exterior. Merchandise was stolen from the gift shops and broken glass ended up in one of the exhibition areas. But otherwise, Bowden said that they're very thankful the most valuable trophies and artifacts have been moved to a secure facility. This report sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. And now,
it doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So LaTanya Lark and her brother Kevin Grant were out for a drive. They were running some errands in Savannah, Georgia on the Harry S. Truman Parkway when something smashed into their windshield. LaTanya Lark told CNN she thought it was a brick. It wasn't a brick. It was actually a turtle. A turtle. A real live turtle smashed into the front windshield and actually got lodged into the windshield. Glass shattered everywhere. It actually landed on Kevin Grant, who was sitting in the passenger seat. The glass did, I mean. He was okay. The turtle was actually taken to an animal hospital. It was alive at the time. Unfortunately, it did not survive because of blood loss, which we are very sad about. LaTanya told CNN it sounded like a bomb went off. She said, as I mentioned, she thought it was a brick. It was a turtle. Police don't know how the turtle was somehow vaulted in the air and crashed into a windshield. I can't even fathom how that's possible. Even if it was hit by another car, how a turtle would somehow get air and angle into another car into the windshield. But
cowabunga, dude.
Seriously. Yeah, maybe it was a ninja turtle. Who knows? But real life proof of Michelangelo and Leonardo doing good things or bad things, I guess, in this case, in the state of Georgia.
Well, Michelangelo is a party dude, and you could just imagine flying through the air, fighting Shredder, one of the foot soldiers, and then smashing right into the windshield. You should see the picture of this. This is crazy. The turtle is about, I don't know, maybe 8 inches wide or so, and it's kind of like a shot put, and it's just embedded in the windshield. Half the turtle is coming through the windshield. Half the turtle's outside. It's just embedded in the windshield. They said they brought this turtle to the hospital, but unfortunately it had lost too much blood. Now, this is what's amazing. The woman who was driving said, quote, "The turtle got cited, but of course he didn't have insurance and he couldn't get a lawyer, so I wound up having to pay a deductible and everything." I don't know if that's the most unintentionally hysterical line ever, or is she saying that seriously? He didn't have insurance and he couldn't get a lawyer, so I paid the deductible. But this story is amazing. Yeah, how does the turtle get launched into the air? And if you've seen a decent-sized turtle, that coming into your windshield is scary. That's like a that's like a shot put coming through.
She thought it was an alien. If it wasn't a brick, maybe it was an alien, because then the legs came out as it smashed into the windshield, and obviously
the legs. The turtle was... How terrifying would that be if something hit your windshield, you have to pull over, and then you see legs coming out of the thing that hit your windshield.
Oh,
my goodness.
For the record, Michelangelo would be the one mutant Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle that wouldn't have a driver's license, so therefore no insurance. So
he was the least responsible of the Ninja Turtles,
Leonardo
or Donatello would probably be the ones that would have the insurance and the driver's license.
Designated driver, if you will.
All right, thank you, Heller.
All right.
This is a great stunt to a news. Turtle falls through, flies through your windshield. That apparently they're thinking that the turtle got hit by another car in front of them. So this turtle gets hit by another car, skids up, flies through the air, and then crashes through their windshield. That's a hell of a day for the turtle.
That is a rough way to go. You don't hear many of these turtle deaths, if you will. And I'm a little disappointed in the animal hospital. We don't have any turtle blood donors that could have been able to try help to save this turtle that was died of all this blood loss.
Well, there was a problem. See, there was a large man waiting in line with a cut hand in front of the turtle, and so they couldn't get to the turtle in time.
It should be noted on animal hospital stories. Yeah, there was a man we used to work with that needed an animal hospital to save his hand.
Yeah.
And yet there was a chimpanzee we talked about last week that went to a regular hospital, a human hospital, for hypothermia. So really, all bets are off on who belongs in regular hospitals and who belongs in animal hospitals.
I'll see your Schwartz and raise you a Schwartz.
Yeah, the Schwartz of Savannah, Georgia was hogging up the entire ER at the vet, and this turtle couldn't get its help.
Took all the calls.
So a huge day at the Amendolara household yesterday, a huge day. Mraz, you know, my pseudo-Aunt Kathy, she's really a family friend, not related to any of us, but we call her our aunt because she's been a longtime family friend. And she cuts my hair. She's actually a professional hairstylist, so I always get my hair cut from her. And, of course, now during quarantine, I can't go see Kathy anymore. So she says, well, you want to do it over Zoom, FaceTime. So I say, sure. She goes, okay, this is what you need to get. You got to get this length comb, this type of bristles. You got to have this length of a scissor and a buzzer. I had the buzzer, didn't have the scissors to cut hair, didn't have the full length comb she wanted. So I ordered them on Amazon. So they came last week. And I had to find a day where the Bourbon Bell could cut my hair. So yesterday was the day. So we set up a 10 a.m. phone call, FaceTime call on the deck. So I'm out of the deck. We prop up my phone on the tripod that I use for my Nomad videos. Okay. And Kathy is now talking to us video conferencing as the Bourbon Bell has the scissors and the buzzer and the comb. Oh. And Kathy is walking her through cutting my hair. Now, Kathy is a Lower East Side girl. She has the thickest Italian New York accent of ever. You've met her before. She enjoys her wine. She enjoys her cigars. She is a classic New York City chick that is a no-nonsense chick, which is why I love her so much. So her teaching my wife how to cut my hair on the deck over FaceTime was peak quarantine for me. This was the highest form of quarantine. And There were times where it was a, I could tell, I couldn't see what my hair looked like, but I could tell Kathy was like, ooh, and Bourbondale was like, ah, and okay, well, we could fix that or we could do that. And I'm just thinking, oh God, this is, how is this going to go? But I was trying to be a good soldier here. I wasn't squirming. I wasn't complaining. I wasn't telling anybody. I just shut my mouth, happy that I was going to have my hair cut enough. And lo and behold, done with it. Vacuum up all the hair clippings. Go take a shower. And you saw me yesterday over our teleconference during the Sunday show. And my hair was all over the place because it had no product in it. And I just come out of the shower. Today, I would say I'm looking clean. I'm looking good. Yesterday, big, big win in the Amendo household.
I would say so. Looking at you today, you look normal. Now, yesterday, again, you said no product, and I didn't know about this haircutting story yesterday when I saw you. I literally typed you. I said, dude, what the heck happened to your hair? It looked like you would come off surfing for 12 hours, and it was just all all up and around. But, I mean, I'm looking at you now, and again, I don't know the full-on details of where everything had to be snipped and this, that, and the other, but your hair looks like you. You look like what I remember you looking like when we were allowed to see each other in person. And for that, it's good, because you, like Bogish, I don't know what is with you guys. You guys have very similar hair, except he's balding a little more than you. You guys had both been growing.
He is balding. I'm not.
All right. There's no need to take shots at Bogish when he's not here.
I'm just saying.
I mean, I was trying to be fair to him. But you guys both had this, like, one long hair that would somehow sprout off the rest of it and fold over your forehead, and it was like it was growing like a weed vine that was trying to tickle your retina. And you both had the same thing. Like, on different days, you'd be looking like, there's Bogus with that one loose hair. There's DA with the one loose hair. Everything is tidied up, and you don't have any stragglers looking to escape the scalp here. And I have to say, for a fine woman like your wife is, to for her ability to make candles and now be able to cut hair, I mean, she's a Renaissance woman. She really is.
I actually trusted her with this task because she's relatively artistic. And I think you have to have a good set of hands to be able to maneuver around. No, really. You know,
so she can recover an onside kick and cut hair. She's on the hands team.
No. She'd be on the hands team. Yes. Because she's done, you know, she was in design for so long. So she knows how to draw a lot of design stuff and stuff to scale and things. So I know that she's good with her hands. I don't know if I would trust my wife or family member that wasn't able to, you know, be relatively, you know, good hand-eye coordination with how they can draw and how they can use utensils or tools or what have you. Because then, you know, you could get a real clumsy cut. What ended up happening was, really, you just have to cut the sides. You have to, basically, where everybody's getting really weirded out is we all look like Doc Brown now coming out of the DeLorean because our side hair is growing around our ears.
Yes.
And so that's where if you've got hair, it's just getting really crazy behind, and we all look like Gila monsters or something with hair coming out from all of our sides. So she just really cleaned up sideburns, hair behind the ear, hair around the ear, trimmed up my neck, and that's enough. So as a little tip to people looking to have maybe their own haircuts in home, don't worry about what's on top. You just have to get the crazy hair that's around the ears so we don't look like Doc Brown anymore.
And every barber that went to barbering school is now yelling at you, it's not just about the ears. Stop discrediting how easy it is to do our job.
No. I don't want to take away from barbers, hairstylists, what have you. You guys are geniuses. No, seriously. Like, I don't know how we could all go on as a society if we did not have haircuts. But if you're looking for a DIY do-it-yourself, don't try to mess up the top of the hair because it could really get ugly there. You're just looking for a round. Like, my dad hasn't had a haircut probably in 3 months. It's crazy. Papa Mendo, his hair is all over the place. I mean, it's just coming out from all sides now.
My dad is more matted than the dog. He's just pressing it with that futon or Yankee hat every day and just hoping you don't notice.
Would you trust Danielle with cutting your hair?
No, I would not. I would not. If I still had hair, I would not. Because one time I trusted her with cleaning my ears, and she almost poked my brain out to the point I was in tears for 45 minutes.
Oh, no. Punctured eardrum?
So she just went a little too deep, and then it happened to be like I just tilted my head at the right time, and it went
like
in. DA, I was in tears. I'm telling you, like, it took me 40 to 45 minutes to compose myself once, and I still bring it up to this day. You know, my wife is big on, like, the zit popping and stuff. She thinks she's, like, pimple popper MD. You know, run up, try to squeeze a pimple off you. And always, like, I am petrified when she comes near me with those hands. Stay away. You almost killed me once.
They're bright, they're insightful, and at least once in their lives, they've laughed at one of his jokes.
Oh, you got a gift, my friend. That's why you are who you are.
Congratulations. You've been named one of DA's favorite people in sports.
He's a member of the Felger and Mash Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston, my old home. He's also co-host of Gasper and Murray. And his Twitter feed, as I like to call him, the oracle of all things low culture, Jim Murray. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Permission to board the mothership.
Permission granted.
I'm very flattered that I'm the first one that's going to be kicking off this segment. That was I'm listening to this. I was like, oh, this is the sweetest thing ever. So thank you.
Well, you're kind of the perfect ironic open for this because I don't know if would you qualify yourself as a pessimist, a cynic, or a realist?
Yeah, I mean, if you had to pick one, it's eternal pessimist. That was the one part. And listening to your open, I was like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be like light and bright, and you're going with me? Oh, geez, wrong guy.
No. But that's why I love you on social media and on the radio, because there is a bluntness to your realism, and you do not try to be flowery. And I wonder how many people you annoy or try to instigate you or you instigate them on social media on a daily basis because of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair amount. And especially now with, you know, the seriousness of the world, which seems to get more serious by the minute, let alone the day. I've tried to gauge my social media interaction, which I know, you know, can be a little bit detrimental to your career and what you're actually trying to do and gain an audience. But right now, I don't know if it's the right time to kind of provoke and battle over nonsense as to whether or not you should put ketchup on a hot dog, you know? So I've tried to temper it a little bit here over the last few days, or at least week or so.
Yesterday, you had somebody ask, what would you tell somebody, a kid interested in going into broadcasting? And you said, do something else. There, that's the lesson. And of course, you had people say, don't you love your job? Don't you have so much fun? What's going on? And you're like, oh, okay, I guess I got to walk that one back as well. That was hysterical.
I did. It's funny. Yeah, so it's like, you know, we know each other enough that you knew it. That's exactly what happened, because I tweeted that, I think, around midnight when I'm transfixed by the news. And that stemmed from a tweet I put out earlier in the day. It's like, I just got to get out of my house. I'm going to drive. I don't know how long I'm going to drive. I'm just going to drive. I'm going to drive and put the windows down. I want to listen to a podcast or something. And this guy's recommendation, when I was asking for someone to suggest a podcast, he was like, yeah, why don't you teach the children? And initially, it's wanted to be like, you know, F them kids. But no, like, as I responded, like, I don't want people to think I don't like my job. I love the job. It's a great gig. I'm very lucky, as we all say in sports radio or anyone that works in this kind of goofy business time and again. We work in the toy store of life. Like, all right, we get it. So I didn't want anyone to think that I didn't like the gig. It's just, I'm a realist. I'm realist about it, the industry. And I've said it, it's what I tweeted for like the last 20 years, what I've always told anyone young trying to get into it. Like, it's not great, you know. It's increasingly shrinking business. You'll probably have to move a million different places. I mean, you know, DA, how many markets have you worked in before you landed with this sweet gig that you got now with a national audience? Like, it's tough, and you're not going to make a lot of money initially, if at all. So, I don't know. I my half joking go to for years has been, yeah, do something else that's more secure and more noble, and it will leave you feeling whole.
Jim Murray, my friend from 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston, joins us here on the show. Your Twitter feed to me is fantastic because you have such hardline opinions on such goofiness. I mean, like, ketchup on a hot dog is absolutely a battle line for you, but so is, you know, the best hamburger in town. So is the worst rock album ever made. I mean, you have hardline stances on things, and there is no negotiation. So how do you catalog all of these power rankings in your head of everything in life, TV, food, movies, sports, constantly?
I guess I'm just passionate about a lot of things. And I'm proud of that. Like in that, maybe not in how hard line I am about my stances on certain things, but I'm proud of the fact I feel like I'm well rounded. You know, like, and not to blow smoke up, you know, your caboose. It's the same. Like you're the same type of dude. Like it's not like you're obviously passionate and knowledgeable about sports, but you know, you have a well-rounded show. You know about a lot of things, and you have people that work with you, like Mraz, that know a lot of things and are passionate about a lot of things and food. And so, you know, like I've always been that kind of guy. I think that makes me a better host. And I just, for me, that's just how it works. Like, I just there's a lot of things that I'm into, whether it's music, food, entertainment, movies, you know, all the other type of nonsense.
But you also have an ability to immediately rank them in your head. I mean, I don't imagine you're jotting down on the back of a napkin, okay, here's my top five rock albums. Oh, I didn't consider this guy. Let me go on to Wikipedia. I don't think a lot of people have that ability because when you rank things, it feels like it is all stored in your head and easy to access at any given point in time. Is that the way that it's working?
Yeah, it is. I'm like a walking Entertainment Weekly list. Like I list. I love lists. I've always loved lists. So it's sick. And this is nothing to be proud of, DA. Like these things are, they're in my head and how I feel about them and how I rank them. And like, I have like running top five lists of pretty much everything that I'm into. But if you ask me what my sister's birthdays are, I have to look at a calendar. Like it's no, that's so terrible, but it's true. Like my sisters, my nieces, like people like outside of my wife and my dad, I don't know people's birthdays. Like it's so bad. It's so, so bad. But you know, you want me to tell you, you know, what are my favorite songs from Physical Graffiti, you know, like 1 to 3, or top five hair metal albums of all time, five best burgers in Boston, like bang, I can give you that, you know, immediately. But my sister Joanna's birthday, now like, oh, hold on, let me look that up and then I'll tell you.
So somebody asked you about ketchup on hot dogs the other day and whether that's just for children. And you said, we've been over this in the past. Yes, you're a child if you put ketchup on your hot dog. Mustard, relish, onions, or plain or chili. That's it. And this incites a lot of animosity on your Twitter feed. Can you believe how many people demand for you to accept them for who they are because they have ketchup on their hot dogs?
No, because that's Twitter. As you know, dude, you could write all you could write, especially now, as you know, everything is just a powder keg. You could write the word "the" and tweet it, and someone's going to be mad. Like, you didn't capitalize it. What else? What do you have to say? Is that your favorite word? Like, it's going to be, people just want to be mad on Twitter more than any other place. I initially liked it and deleted Facebook well over 10 years ago. I always felt like I was at the forefront of deleting Facebook. And I was like, oh, Twitter, 140 characters. It's limited. It's who's funnier faster. That's how it was initially. And now it's worse than Facebook. And I don't even know why I'm there anymore, but I am because I'm part of the problem.
Jim Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston. You were asked also about your thoughts on boneless wings, and your thoughts were, again, a very hard-line stance. Boneless wings are fine on their own, but if you're going to say they actually taste better than bone-in, especially the flats, then your mouth isn't working correctly, or you're just an idiot. Either that, or you're just lazy, or don't want to get dirty. Again, these are combative hard-line stances on whether boneless wings are tastier than bone-in wings.
And this is something that bugs me because I think it's such a distinct north of the Mason-Dixon line thing that people are like, no, boneless are better. They're easier. Your audience, excuse me, your audience in the South, anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon, gets this. It's always flat. You can go to places. You can order flats instead of drummies. The meat's better. It's juicier. They're easier to dip. And people in the South prefer the bone in. And having lived down there for a little bit, like, I learned that. Like, look, it's all good. I'm not going to pretend that, like, boneless fried chicken's a bad time. It's fun. It's good. It's tasty. It's just tastier on the bone. Any meat is tastier on the bone. That's just science. But if you live in the South and people in the South know, like, you prefer the bone-in wing. So I learned that down there. And since I've returned back to the Northeast, I've tried to tell the people and tell restaurants, and some friends of mine that are restaurant owners, you should have the ability to order flat only. And they've told me it's a giant pain in the ass to do that. Nobody cares as much as you do, so shut up about it. But yeah, that wing thing, that tweet proves it. Like, that wing thing, I'm extremely passionate about. Like, I just don't understand how people don't get it. Like, the flats are better. They're tastier. You just don't want to get your hands greasy and get the stuff all over you. Like, stop being a pain in the ass about it. Just eat the bone-in wings. They're better. You know it.
Do you feel like there's any good TV on these days, or is the classic TV all done with? Are we out of that era now?
I mean, I don't know if I don't even want to say I don't know. I know we're never going to get another sitcom like Seinfeld or even Parks and Rec. I mean, even just the stuff that some of the jokes that were in some of those shows, and Parks and Rec, what, a decade old or whatever? Like, you can't get away with half of that stuff anymore. So I think the days of the great sitcom might be over. But great TV, like, I like a lot of trash TV. My wife and I are obsessed with 90 Day Fiancé. So I think that's good. Like, I think if you're into trash TV, this is the golden age of trash TV. I'm not into the Kardashians and Real Housewives. She is, but the 90 Day Fiancé and all their offshoots on TLC, and there's like a million of them. Oh, I'm obsessed with them because it's just like, it's just one loser after another. I just can't get enough of it.
You oftentimes say the 90s were the last great decade. We just watched a 10-part series, 10 hours on the 90s when it came to The Last Dance of the Chicago Bulls. Why was the 90s the last great decade?
Best music. I think it's the height of hip-hop and rap, for sure. I mean, I think that is proven during the Last Dance of the music that was used in that 10-part series. If nothing else, I thought that might have been the most impressive part of it. The fashion, the shows that we got out of it. I know I sound like an old. I now am an old. I'm in my 40s. But I'm so nostalgic for that decade. And, yeah, I mean, were there bad things that came out of it? Obviously, whether it was, the riots in L.A. in 92, the bombing of the Trade Center in 93. I mean, we all know, there are horrible things that happened in the 90s. Columbine in 99 and things like that. It's just, I'll always have a special place in my heart for that decade. It just felt like everything was a little more light. I know, people, again, you can't bring up any kind of politician. Well, he was a bad guy. Like, the Clinton years, did anyone truly, have a terrible time during the Clinton years as a whole? Again, there were bad things that happened, but I don't know. I loved that time so much. It just felt like everything was a little bit more carefree.
Jim Murray joins us for 98.5 The Sports, one of my favorite people in sports. So, being in Boston, has there been a bit of a sea change on Tom Brady? I mean, it felt like, as of February 1, the city absolutely still loved Tom Brady. And as of March 15th and April 1, it was, we can't stand this guy anymore.
Yeah, there was a sea change with that first picture that showed up in the Tampa Bay, I think it was the Tampa Bay Times, right, of him practicing. And he had the old creamsicle Bucks uni on, or the practice jersey on. And that's where it was like, oh, now you're going to do OTAs and you're going to put in extra work, which he hadn't done here the last couple of years. I didn't care. I actually kind of thought it was funny because I'm more Tom over team and have been that way over the last 5 years. I think he's been the more important piece. That's no real knock on Belichick. I understand how much he means and how important he is, and he's the greatest coach ever. But I just didn't really like how he handled this whole situation. I felt like he wanted to move on after he drafted Garoppolo. So I can understand why Brady got a little diva-ish and Dan Marino-ish at the end here. And I still think he has something left in the tank, and they kind of did him dirty and pushed him out. And especially after he won that MVP the year that they lost the Eagles in the Super Bowl, that incentive-laden contract they put in front of him, I thought was just straight-up insulting. So I can understand why he was pissed. So when I saw the photos, I'm like, good, he's reinvigorated. This is what I wanted. Because after last season, the way it played out, that's what I wanted, a reinvigorated Tom, a reinvigorated Bill, and let's see how it plays out without each other. But boy, people saw that. It's like, oh, now he's going to try. Now he cares. Oh, you did us dirty. It's one of the great and terrible things about Boston and New England as a whole. It's so provincial. Like, it's part of our charm, but it's also maybe our biggest flaw. Like, oh, you left us and now you did us dirty. Like, you forgot where you came from. Like, oh, just get over it, you stupid babies, and wish him the best. The guy's given us the greatest run in 20 years. He's everything that any of us could have ever wished for, we could have rooted for as sports fans around here, especially with that franchise post-Bledsoe, where it was like, oh, this team's just going to be 9-7 at best and sniff one Super Bowl, and that's going to be it. And now they've won, a million championships. They went to a million. The 20 years is now over. He's still got something left. Root for him, you babies.
It is an amazing insight into Boston, is that if you are part of Boston, oh, they'll defend you to the hilt. I mean, they have your back like no other. But the moment that you're out the door, forget it, you're the enemy. And I can't believe how quickly it turned on Tom Brady. He hasn't played a football game yet, and I couldn't believe how much animosity antagonism, dismissiveness I saw from Patriots fans that just last year were telling everybody that would listen, Brady still got it. He's just got no weapons. He's got no offensive line. The Patriots are doing him dirty. And then you fast forward to April and it's the guy is toast. All he wants is attention. He's going to be bad. He stinks. Good riddance. I couldn't believe how quickly it changed.
I'm surprised at you, D.A., because they've turned on you, too.
Exactly. But I didn't win six Super Bowls for them.
But if anyone should know, it's you. No, it's, and especially Patriots fans, it's a weird juxtaposition in that, like, they're my favorite of the four major teams. They are. And I love football, and I love all that. But they're the worst. They're the worst fans. They're the worst. And it's like, oh, God, everything is a slight. Everything is they hate us because they ain't us. And it's like, oh, can you just be normal for a second, please?
And you have actually said that you travel still to go see a road game, to go see the Patriots once a year and mm-hmm. when you can, and that the worst part of going on the road is having to deal with other Patriots fans.
Oh, yeah. And the worst was... So now two seasons ago when they got waxed by Tennessee, I went down there. That was the yearly trip. I went down with a bunch of guys. We went to Nashville. And it was Patriots self. And as soon the first day, it was like, oh, God, like I'm bumping into people I went to high school with. It's like, oh, no, this is not why I do this. And swear on my mother's grave, like the second day, this kid in his 20s comes up to me, hammered, at this bar with my friends. Again, like I'm there as a fan. So, and I know I said things that pissed people off, whatever. He comes up, dude, and in my face, like yelling at me about Felger and Maz, the show that I'm on, things that we've said, you're a terrible fan. Like, it just reading me the riot act, enough so that my friend's like starting to crowd around. It's like, oh, it's on? Like, this is going to happen at this dumb bar in Nashville where I'm supposed to be having a good time? Like, what is happening? Thankfully, I diffused it. Like, nothing happened. We actually hugged it out over a mutual hatred over Boston College, of all things. And but it was just like, but what I kept trying to express to him is like, dude, like, it's not an act what we say. Like, it's just, you know, it's an opinion thing. Like, if you're that mad about it, like, you can always call, you can email. And other than that, if you're that mad and you're in my face about it, like, I don't know what to tell you. And more than anything else, I'm literally paying out of pocket to be here this weekend. So don't call me a fake fan. If you want to think that, that's one thing. But it's just not true. I'm here as a fan. I've always been a fan of this team. It's just that we differ in our opinions about everything, and I don't think that they're infallible, you know? So, I don't know. That's tough to get through a lot of people's heads. I get it, especially when liquor is involved.
And just everything is a fight. Everything right. ends up as a fight in Boston, no matter what. It can't just be a disagreement. It has to be, actually, we need to throw down right now.
Right, and I... Again, a lot of times, like, that's part of the charm of here. It is, but it's, you know, not everything needs to be like, we got to go outside. Like, no, we don't. Like, let's just have a shot and a beer and continue to yell at each other and then, you know, find something that we mutually hate. Like I said, we can hug it out. So
you can follow Jim on Twitter at Big Jim Murray for immediate lists of everything running in his head of all things low culture, which I absolutely love in his Twitter feed. Big Jim, it's awesome to have you here on the show and to kick off this series, man. Thanks so much for doing it with us today.
Thanks, D.A. I really appreciate it. Stay safe and healthy, and talk to you soon.
Back at you, bud. Jim Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston, starts our series of my favorite people in sports. Tomorrow, NFL Network's Adam Rank.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
All right, so DeSean Jackson suggested having all of the players mic'd up for NFL broadcasts without fans so that you could actually hear what they're talking about versus maybe some artificial crowd noise being pumped in. We talked about the pros and cons, that you had players who are likely to say some things that they have to be dumped, dropped, edited out, versus crowd noise that right now is seemingly working well in the Bundesliga, adding a little ambiance and making it sound kind of natural. But it sounds like mic'd up players is definitely the preference of you guys. On Twitter, 79% said we'd prefer mic'd up players to pumped in crowd noise. On Facebook, even more stark, 83%. Now here's your factoid. In 1953, sound engineer Charles Douglas invented the laugh track known as the, quote, laugh box. laugh spelled L-A-F-F. It had 320 different laughs and was the size of a refrigerator. How about that? The original laugh track had 320 different laughs and was the size of a refrigerator. I want to see and to experience the original laugh box. It would make me feel like a real stand-up comedian, that everything that I said was pretty funny, even though we know that that's far from the case. The laugh box. Who knew?
Can you drive across country and see the laugh box? Kind of like it's the arches of St. Louis.
I'd love to. That's something I would totally go out of my way to go see, the laugh box.
Somewhere in Nebraska. Just pull over. Here it is.
Originally, Mraz thought that they had squeezed 153 different people into that box. Okay, Jim, you laugh. Paula, now it's your turn. Susan, quickly. Now Susan and Joe. Everyone together. This is for I Love Lucy. So, as we know, Mraz is always going to fight for the rights of the heft. Of the hefty ones, Heft Nation, Chubbo Nation. And we did a throwback this day to Mothership History going back 5 years to 2015, and of course it happened again. And, you know, just hearing Mraz over time defend the large of the population just is really cause to re-listen to it again. Here is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
During quarantine, have the C cups gone to D cups?
They're not D cups, but they're flopping all over the place. I got in a bathing suit in my pool, and I'm a wreck. I am a true wreck. I am nowhere near where I was last summer. I'm very sloppy. I'm very floppy.
You're the fattest boy in camp.
You're up 14 from start of quarantine?
Up 11. I lost 3 last week. It's really, you got to okay. See. I'm basically having press conferences with my wife, dog, and baby with a curve up there telling you where we're at. And the weight gain begin to flatten a little bit here.
Attention campers, tonight's lecture is liposuction, option or obsession.
We had our biggest decrease in pounds to date through the quarantine after a big spike in cases. So we believe that we've plateaued a little bit here on the weight loss, weight gain. And there's not an Entenmann's donut to be found right now as I've thrown out some junk food.
What is the toughest part about looking at yourself in the mirror right now?
Anyone who brings candy into this camp is not your friend. He is a destroyer.
I think it's a combination. I'm just so pasty white while being floppy that at least if I was tan and my moobs were just drooping, at least it would look a little better. It's just like... If they came out with a fat version of the movie Powder, and that's me right now.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle.
I look gross. Like,
so you look like an Entenmann's powdered donut.
I do. And then like if I look, my belly button looks like you're staring into like where that reverse galaxy is that they reported about in the news. It's just a deep hole that doesn't end because of where I'm at. So it just. It's gross. I'm pasty and sloppy.
Get off the scale. All right, fine. Fine. I blame myself.
So that's where SpaceX actually went, right into your belly button.
Right into my belly button. I can't find how deep this goes. It's not a spoon long enough.
I like how the F word's not allowed around here, nor the H word, healthy. You're not allowed to say healthy.
Healthy sounded harsh there.
Epic fail, you loser.
That. Is why you fail.
Epic fail.
I'm interested of the Thictator's take on Jim Murray, who joined us earlier in the show, earlier in the hour for My Favorite People in Sports. Jim Murray is a hardline flats guy over drummies when it comes to wings. Mraz, where do you stand on being a hardline flats guy?
I'm fine with either flats or drummies. I think his first point, Jim Murray, on like the people absolutely waving the flag for boneless wings. It's something novelty and it's fine. But yes, the flats first, drums second, although there's not that big a disparity. But bone in over boneless, of course, is where you get more flavor.
You know, I have to say, I came to this realization probably 5 or 6 years ago. Boneless wings are glorified nuggets. They're not even really wings. They're just a jazzed up nugget. And so if you think that you're getting over on somebody because of their boneless wings, They're not. And as you know, Mraz, they're not even real meat. They're just like taken from every part of the chicken, processed up, put into balls, then cut up to look like it's a chicken tender, if you will.
Of course, and really you're eating it because you love the sauce that's on it and the fried crunchiness to it. Not exactly the juicy white meat inside is what you're looking for in a boneless wing. I mean, you're dunking it in blue cheese. You're loving whatever hot sauce is on it. Are you even considering the taste of the chicken in it, where the taste of the chicken is so rich in a perfect flat or drum?
And as Jim said in no uncertain terms, meat off the bones, just better. It's proven. It's science. It's just better.
We have learned a lot about science and data, and he is absolutely right. It is just better. Absolutely off a bone. Now, if you have a nice rotisserie chicken in a supermarket, forget the hot sauce. Plunk that flat right out of your mouth.
Mraz used the word scientifical today here on the show. Scientifical. So you can use that in conversation today. So we are starting a series, and it'll continue throughout this week, of my favorite people in sports. Tomorrow, NFL Network's Adam Rank. I'm sure we'll talk NFL with him, but also Adam is one of the funniest guys I know. He's actually done stand-up comedy before. So I always like Rank's sense of humor. It aligns with my sense of humor quite a bit. It's very sarcastic and just always good for a laugh, but also loves his NFL, loves old-school NFL. So he's going to be fun to have here on the show. But we're going to continue this all week long. Every day this week we'll have another person either in the media or around sports that I really like, from either watching them on TV, listening to them on the radio, following them on social media, watching them on YouTube or what have you. And we'll do that all week long, or reading their stuff as well. We'll have some writers here on the show also. So throughout the week, my favorite people in sports continues tomorrow with Adam Rank from NFL Network. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of the DA Show. Thanks to Pete the Body Bellotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to the Wizard of Watch DA, Andrew Kaplan. And on your headlines, Brad Heller, dessert coordinator. Connor Green, your associate producer today. Be good. Be good to one another. I'm DA. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnects.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.